Which snake in Africa is currently responsible for the highest number of deadly bites? Why does this animal sometimes stay in exactly the same spot for up to 6 weeks? And why is it that dogs and meerkats can hardly smell it at all? Hello, I am your safari guide. My name is Frank. And today I will tell you all about the snake that even the most experienced guides respect the most. The puff adder. The puff adder is responsible for more deadly snake bites in Africa than any other snake species. Together with the Mozambique spitting cobra, it causes the majority of all serious snake bites in southern Africa. And there's a simple reason for that. You simply see it more often than any other snake. Why is that? Quite simply, because the puff adder does not flee. It simply stays put, motionless, and perfectly camouflaged. And so perfectly camouflaged that I myself almost stepped on one once. That was last year in Zimbabwe. I had spent a few days really out in the wilderness, and to be honest, I was looking forward to something quite simple. A shower and a night at the campsite. A bit of comfort. The place was on Lake Kariba in the north of Zimbabwe. And freshly showered, I come out of the restroom, and right by the door, there's a small concrete step, and the rest around it is sandy, earthy ground. And I instinctively look down at the ground just out of habit. And there it is, a puff adder resting less than 10 centimeters from my bare foot. It is sitting right at the very edge of this step, perfectly camouflaged. Its upper side is exactly level with the concrete surface, as if it were still part of that surface. Wow, that was close. But that's exactly how many of these encounters happen. Not deep in the bush, but in places where you feel safe for a moment. By the door after a shower at the campsite. In this episode, I'll tell you about two more encounters with this extraordinary snake. It's going to get really exciting. The puff adder is a master of camouflage. It is a short, stocky snake. Its body is massive, kind of cylindrical, much like a thick, powerful human forearm. You could also say it looks as if someone forcefully compressed a long snake together. V-shaped markings run along its back. They are light with a dark outline. These patterns are never identical. Each animal has a unique pattern. If you remember, we also know this from the zebra in the last episode. And because of the pattern, the animal almost merges with the ground. Between dry grass and sandy soil, it is practically invisible. And that is its hunting strategy. It doesn't rely on speed. It relies on invisibility. Recent research has proven a puff adder that is hiding does not hiss. And it also doesn't strike when you come near it, because that would give away its camouflage. It really stays absolutely motionless and does not move, even if you walk right past it. Only when you step directly on it does it strike, lightning fast and without warning. That's exactly what makes it so dangerous. It specializes in not being seen. However, if its camouflage is blown and the puff adder knows it has been seen, it is in danger itself because it could become prey. Then it inflates its body. It literally puffs itself up. At the same time, it emits a low-pitched, menacing hissing sound. This is its final warning. So, if you happen to hear the following distinct sound while traveling in Africa, you really need to be extremely cautious. If this defensive warning is completely ignored, the puff adder quickly assumes its lethal attack position. It brings its body into a flat S shape and lowers its head slightly. And then it strikes lightning fast in a fraction of a second. It is known for having the fastest bite of all snake species in Africa. And by the way, the name puff adder comes from this behavior, from this puffing up. So what actually happens when a puff adder bites a human? Well, the fangs are almost 2 centimeters long. And when the snake opens its powerful mouth, the 2 fangs swing forward like hinges. And when it bites, the fangs penetrate very deep into the tissue and inject the venom. The venom of the puff adder is highly cytotoxic to tissue. That means it destroys cells and tissue. Immediately after the bite, severe pain sets in. Swelling begins within minutes. This can spread to the entire limb within hours. In addition, blistering, hemorrhaging, or persistent bleeding from the bite sites often occur. In severe cases, tissue necrosis can occur, meaning tissue dies. The lymph nodes often swell as well. And yes, in particularly severe cases, additional systemic complications can often arise, such as internal bleeding and serious circulatory problems. Fortunately, fatalities in humans remain quite rare, but without prompt medical treatment, the consequences can be truly devastating. Sometimes the affected tissue is so severely damaged that surgical amputations are even necessary. It is very important to remember, in the event of a snake bite, seek professional medical attention immediately. Get to a hospital as quickly as you possibly can. At the same time, spotting a puff adder is a real highlight on safari. When I travel to southern Africa and don't encounter a single snake, I feel like I'm missing a part of the bush experience. Snake sightings are always something special for me. I like these animals because they are so incredibly fascinating. For example, the puff adder travels forward in a rectilinear fashion. This essentially means that it moves just like a caterpillar. This movement is achieved through the lateral contractions of its muscles. The scales on its belly grip the ground, and in this way, the snake slowly pushes itself forward. In doing so, it leaves a straight, deep track in the sand. The tail follows behind and also leaves a thinner line. This type of movement is slow, but it is energy efficient. I still vividly remember a night in the Kalagadi Transfrontier Park. This national park is located across the border between South Africa and Botswana. I was traveling in the Botswana section, and in this part of the park, there are only individual sites, no campgrounds, so nothing is fenced in. Although with snakes, that doesn't really matter anyway. So I was truly all alone right in the middle of nature. No fence, no cell phone reception, not a soul in sight. I'm all bundled up tightly in my sleeping bag inside the rooftop tent, and I suddenly wake up in the middle of the night because a big storm is coming. I realize that I left a small plastic ladder sitting outside and I really don't want the strong wind to blow it away. So I have to get up to save the thing. I stow it safely in the car, and since it's a beautiful full moon, I just take another slow walk all the way around my car, right next to the driver's door. Here we see a large puff adder, and it is slowly moving along the car in its typical straight and distinctive caterpillar-like motion. Thanks to the storm, I thought to myself, it's a stroke of luck to see such a beautiful animal. Was I afraid? No, it is not quite like that. Fear is not a particularly helpful companion to have along on safaris, but I definitely have a deep sense of respect. And this calm and straightforward way of moving on that full moon night is always in my mind whenever I think of a puff adder. Puff adders are ectothermic, meaning cold-blooded like all reptiles. They don't have a built-in heater like we humans do. Their energy comes from outside, that is, from the sun, from warm ground, from the air temperature. After cool nights, you sometimes see them basking in the morning or late afternoon. That means they lie where the ground still retains some warmth or where the sun shines. And this also explains the difference between summer and winter. In the warmer months, it is noticeably more active, its metabolism simply runs higher, and the nights are milder. The prey animals, like mice, for example, are also more active. In cooler times, the animal lives more slowly, and that's why sightings in winter are very rare. And since I mentioned the prey animals earlier, what exactly is on a puff adder's menu? Puff adders mainly eat rodents, rats, mice, spring hares, but they also consume birds, frogs, and lizards, and even other snakes. And they are ambush predators. The puff adder coils its body into a spiral. Its head is slightly raised and angled downward. This is its attack position. And then it waits for a small mouse, a rat, a bird, or even a little frog. And it can really wait a long time. In fact, up to 6 weeks, completely motionless and incredibly patient. When prey comes by, it strikes faster than the human eye can follow. When the puff adder attacks, it injects its venom deep into the tissue. The prey may still run a few meters, but then it collapses. The snake follows the trail and swallows the animal whole. And its hunting strategy is also really interesting. The puff adder actually uses two different luring techniques. Luring technique number one. When frogs or toads are nearby, the puff adder moves its tongue. It flickers quickly up and down like a wriggling insect. Amphibians mistake the tongue for prey, come closer, and then become prey themselves. This technique is called lingua luring, and the puff adder is the first terrestrial snake in which this behavior has been documented. Now let's move on to luring technique number two. This method is used for birds. Here it moves the tip of its tail, also like a wriggling insect. This is called caudal luring, and the puff adder knows exactly which technique works for which prey. For amphibians, it uses its tongue, for birds, its tail. For a snake, that's an astonishing cognitive achievement. The puff adder has yet another trick up its sleeve. It doesn't just camouflage itself visually, it's also hard to detect by scent. Researchers from South Africa discovered this. The puff adder is actually the first known vertebrate to use what's called chemical crypsis or scent camouflage. In experiments, dogs and meerkats were trained to recognize different snake species by their scent. That worked really well. Most snakes were identified without any problem. But with the puff adder, both the dogs and the meerkats failed completely. And that's when they realized that puff adders are extremely hard to smell. There are over 40 different animal species that hunt puff adders. And many of them, of course, rely on their sense of smell. But a snake that remains motionless in the grass for weeks and leaves hardly any scent traces is very hard to track down. It is suspected that the lack of scent is connected to their extremely slow metabolism. Less activity, less perspiration, fewer traces that can be smelled. For an ambush predator, that actually fits the picture perfectly. The more she avoids revealing any sign that she is present, the more effectively her strategy works. I then wondered, how do you actually train dogs to recognize different snakes? I did some research, and to summarize briefly, in experiments, sterile cotton cloths were brought into contact with different species of snakes. They basically collected the scent and then trained dogs and meerkats to find these scents again. This works with rewards. If they find the right snake, they get a treat, otherwise they don't. With the puff adder towel, the test subjects came up empty-handed. But the story of the puff adder is far from over. A particularly fascinating chapter is its reproduction. Puff adders reach sexual maturity at around 4 years of age. The mating season takes place between October and December, which is the African spring and early summer. The females produce pheromones through glands in their skin, which they use to specifically attract males. If several males appear, yes, then there is conflict and they fight among themselves for the right to mate. Of course, because if they've already been attracted, they want to mate as well. That's understandable. In doing so, they perform a kind of wrestling match. They entwine their necks around each other and try to push their opponent to the ground. The winner follows the female, flicks his tongue at her, tries to lift her tail, and coils around her until she either rejects him or opens her cloaca. And the cloaca is a body opening at the rear end of the snake. Through the cloaca, feces are excreted and urine is expelled. By the way, in puff adders, the urine is not a clear liquid, but rather a whitish, creamy mass. It consists mainly of uric acid. Yes, and this cloaca also serves for reproduction. In short, it is an opening for excretion and reproduction. Let's get back to mating. It lasts up to an hour, and after a gestation period of about 4 to 5 months, the female gives birth to between 20 and 40 live young in the summer. The puff adder is actually ovoviviparous. That sounds complicated, but it's quickly explained. The female produces eggs for the offspring, but she doesn't lay these eggs. The eggs remain inside the mother, and the embryos develop within the egg, and in the end, the young are born alive. This ovoviviparity has a crucial advantage in the wild. The offspring are protected until birth. And that sets it apart from most other snake species. Because those lay their eggs in a hiding place and then leave them to nature. The puff adder is different in this regard. With the puff adder, the eggs are not just lying around somewhere in the sand where they could be found and eaten. Snake eggs are actually considered a delicacy for monitor lizards or jackals. With a puff adder, the eggs remain inside the mother's body until the young hatch. At birth, the young are about 15 to 20 centimeters long and already fully developed. Does the mother now take care of the young? No, there is no brood care, no protection, no guidance. The young are actually on their own from the very first moment. And they are, and this is very important, equipped from the very start with fully functional venomous fangs and highly potent, deadly venom. Because they need the venom for successful hunting, and it also aids in digestion. This means that even the smallest, cutest puff adder is highly venomous. Incidentally, this also applies to all other venomous snakes. Puff adders are not social animals. Most of the time, they live alone. Encounters with others of their species only occur during the breeding season. Then the males fight among themselves, females meet males, and afterwards they go their separate ways again. Each puff adder once again becomes its own silent presence in the landscape. But how much time do they have left for this quiet life? In the wild, the life expectancy of puff adders is between 10 and 15 years. However, every second puff adder does not survive its first year of life. Their natural predators include birds of prey, especially ground hornbills. I have already talked about them in detail in a separate episode. The large proud secretary birds also hunt snakes and kill them with powerful, precise kicks. Other enemies include eagles, honey badgers, jackals, warthogs, mongooses, and interestingly, other snakes. Cobras in particular have a preference for puff adders. Another significant enemy is us humans and the various cars we drive. Snakes often love to lie on the warm asphalt roads, and unfortunately, many are accidentally run over and killed this way. The puff adder doesn't just live in the wild. It frequently approaches the edges of settlements, wanders through residential gardens, and sometimes even makes appearances at campsites. Once, in the Kalagadi Transfrontier Park, this time on the South African side, I saw something that has stayed with me to this day. Right in the middle of Matamata camp, a puff adder was slowly moving between the tents and cars. And even before most people realized what was happening, the birds had already figured it out. White-browed sparrow weavers stood in a circle around the snake and loudly sounded the alarm. These calls are known as alarm calls. They are warning calls that birds use to signal to other animals and, of course, to their own family members that a predator is nearby. Depending on the species, they sound different, but the message is always the same. Attention, danger. and it was only because the birds were so loud that the campers noticed the snake as well. And anyone who knows South Africans knows that there's no lengthy discussion. They act immediately. In this case, one of the men came running with a broom, pushed it under the puff adder, and flung it in a high arc over the fence. To be honest, I was pretty speechless when I saw that. Because that is neither a good nor a gentle method for relocating a venomous snake. For the animal, it's certainly painful to fall from several meters high onto the ground. Every animal deserves respect, even snakes. And you can see a photo of this puff adder I just mentioned on my website, safariguide.online. A puff adder actually isn't interested in people. It follows a very simple principle, food. Where there are food scraps, mice and rats feel at home. And where there are rodents, yes, a snake is never far away. And that reminds me that on the same evening, a venomous Cape cobra crawled under my car. But that's a story for another time. What's remarkable is the role of the puff adder in the ecosystem. A puff adder needs to eat about 1 kilogram of rodents per year to maintain its body mass. In years when rodent populations explode, a puff adder can drastically increase its food intake. And numerous scientific studies have shown that when food is virtually unlimited, a puff adder can eat up to 10 kilograms of mice and rats per year. That's an incredible 10 times their own body weight. This makes them highly efficient regulators of local rodent populations. In the African wilderness, there is a lesson that hardly any animal teaches as impressively as the puff adder. Danger is not always the loudest, not the fastest, and not the biggest, but rather it is what waits, what stubbornly refuses to flee, and what blends so perfectly with its natural surroundings that you only ever see it when it is already too late. The puff adder embodies an ancient strategy: patience, camouflage, and precision. It forces us to pay attention, it demands respect. And it serves as a reminder that Africa's vast wilderness is not only made up of lions and elephants, but also of quiet, invisible, and equally fascinating creatures that lurk in the shadows. Thank you for joining me on Safari today. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to support the Safari Guide, please check out my Patreon page. With your financial support, you help me continue this podcast independently and ad-free. And in doing so, you make it possible for new episodes to feature deeper research and even more stories from the world of safaris. Because that's what this is all about, not just seeing animals, but understanding them. You can find the link in the show notes. Thank you very much. Until the next episode, Frank, your safari guide.